ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If I had to pick one word to describe America's history in the Middle East, I'd probably go with mistake.
But it was, the Americans believe, all a dreadful mistake.
The backpackers crossed the poorly marked border by mistake.
The war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake.
So why is it happening again? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we actually try to learn from the world's mistakes. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
After an oil spike on Friday, the price of Brent crude has fallen again, as this sort of volatility continues to shape the global economy. As we wait for the latest CPI data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics on Wednesday, what knock-on effects are already evident in the retail sector? And as central banks begin to meet around the world this week, how will they calculate the price of this unpredictability? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Daniel Ziffer.
And I'm ABC News business editor Michael Yander.
Mike, after a busy Friday, a special bonus episode, we're back at it again.
Yep, well, took the train in as normal today, Dan. No need to run for the bus. In fact, I did run for the bus this morning, but I missed it by that much.
I'm sorry that your day has been made this much less efficient, but we'll get through it. We saw that oil spike that we discussed on Friday amidst US President Donald Trump's pledges to attack Iranian bridges and power plants and Houthi militia actions in the Bab al-Mandab Strait. But the price of Brent crude, the product that is then refined into the petrol and diesel and jet fuel products that we use, has since come down after Trump paused strikes on Iran. We've seen it fall substantially. Where's it at?
Yeah, so we're currently seeing Brent crude prices around $92.93 a barrel as we record this morning, just after 11:30 in Eastern time in Australia. That is roughly about 7% down from where they peaked on Friday when we did that special episode, Dan. So it's a pretty noticeable fall back from just over $100 a barrel. As you say, it's after a couple of days where the US has refrained from striking Iranian targets. We haven't seen further escalation from the Houthis in the Red Sea or the Iranians with retaliatory strikes. So everyone's just betting that maybe things will cool down, they'll cool their heels, we'll go back to where we were.
So still elevated, but it has come down. We spoke last week with Ian Verinder about our problems around refinery capacity. We're certainly not out of the woods when it comes to high oil prices, which of course led to higher petrol prices.
And are a good reason to take the bus and train to work or cycle in, as I know you do, Dan, when you can. Unleaded petrol prices, certainly the premium prices are already punching above $2 in Sydney when I drive past the service stations. Diesel prices have also spiked considerably and remain a lot higher than petrol prices because of all those refining problems we've talked about before. You know, Russian refineries out, Russian diesel exports off the table globally, Turkey keeping diesel back at home as well. Other countries trying to hoard what they have. Middle East refining capacity also out of action because they can't get their product out. And we've seen refinery damage from previous Iranian strikes. And of course, there's no point fixing your refineries if you A, can't get the product out, and B, don't know whether they're going to be bombed again next week.
So Australians are using slightly less petrol with the uptake of electric vehicles, but we've been very slow on EV uptake compared to a lot of other nations. Do you think this crisis is a signal that a lot of consumers have needed, that we're going to keep seeing that shift?
The uncertainty around what your petrol price is going to be has driven, and the availability, and Ian Verinder wrote a fantastic piece on this last week, the availability of cheap Chinese electric vehicles, and particularly in Australia where there aren't big tariff barriers, there's no domestic auto industry to protect. So we're getting the lion's share. You know, we're getting first pick on a lot of these cheap Chinese EVs coming into the market. The demand is huge. The sales percentage is rocketing up from virtually nothing a couple of years ago. We're now seeing around a quarter of sales in some months going to full EVs, and when you factor in hybrids as well, we're roughly seeing, I think, in many months about half of new car sales either being an electric vehicle or some kind of hybrid. And that's only going to increase as the technology continues becoming cheaper and as we have this uncertainty around how much fuel is going to cost.
Now, back to price. The Prime Minister told the Insiders program on the ABC the government was not currently planning another fuel excise extension, but there might be some announcements related to fuel policies kind of coming down the line. So just a quick reminder, how does the fuel excise work and who pays it?
Yeah, so it gets charged at the wholesale gate before the petrol gets shipped out to the service station. And it basically gets added on to the price that the service station has to pay, the wholesale price that it's paying, and therefore passed on to the consumer. So at the moment, we've got a 16-cent reduction remaining. That's half of the original excise cut that the government introduced. That comes back on August 2. The double whammy there is that they also index excise annually, and the indexation is due to happen as well. So we're actually likely to see another cent, maybe two, come onto taxes for fuel if the government doesn't extend the excise cuts.
Under governments of different stripes, it has been the same. Australia has, although it might not feel like it, some of the cheapest and most lightly taxed liquid fuel in the world. I know it won't feel like that as people are filling up at the pump, but compared to similar nations...
If you've ever been on a driving holiday in Europe, you can appreciate how much cheaper fuel is here, and you can also, well, that combined with the narrow streets make you understand why Europeans tend to drive very, very small cars compared to what we do here.
Now, what to make of these as yet unknown future fuel policies? Obviously, excise is the key one that government has when it comes to the petrol price, although they've been very active in building our reserves. And we saw the Prime Minister earlier this year go on a large tour of Asian nations, essentially swapping our LNG, our liquid natural gas, for future diesel and petrol supplies. What do you think these levers might be?
Yeah, well, that's one reason why. Again, where, you know, we haven't yet seen increased taxes on those LNG exports because, you know, part of the quid pro quo for us getting liquid fuels was, committing to our North Asian trading partners in particular that the flow of Australian LNG would continue uninterrupted and relatively lightly taxed, given that countries like, say, Japan have large equity interests in those in many of those gas projects. As for levers, I think it's more of the same. It's trying to secure those supplies coming from the Asian refineries in Singapore, with further discussions taking place with the Singaporeans about ensuring those fuel supplies. Same with Japan, with Korea is a major exporter of fuel to Australia. And we saw earlier in this year those discussions with Malaysia and Brunei as well around some of the raw product and guaranteeing that the two remaining refineries in Australia can still get adequate supplies of that crude oil that they need to produce things like diesel, jet fuel and refined petrol.
It's great to have friends, but for government it seems like it's really great to have friends who need each other.
Yeah, well, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Arguably, Australia hasn't extracted enough of the leverage we have, given what a big player in gas exports we are. And at the moment, there is a big crunch on gas exports in a way much bigger than what we've seen in fuel and certainly in oil. European gas prices are going through the roof because they're desperately trying to restock while the weather is not only warm, exceedingly hot in Europe, but ahead of winter, they really need to bring up their reserves to 75 or 80% of capacity or more to make sure they can get through the winter and don't run out of gas. And at the same time, they're trying to divert exports that would otherwise go to Asia. So the large Asian economies Australia is contracted to supply are really relying on our LNG exports to keep their industries powered.
We're told that energy volatility is affecting the economy far beyond prices at the petrol bowser, where we often put our attention. Michael, you've just gone through the trading update from the Myer Group, the entity behind the retail giant Myer, which has the department stores. What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, there's a great graph. We were just discussing it before we hit record on our chat, Dan, but unfortunately we can't show you a graph on a podcast.
Oh, no. I can give you an audio representation of the graph. This is about the trading conditions. It's like this. Up and down.
It's a pretty good summary. And the last couple of months in particular have been much more down than up. Unsurprisingly, Myer saw a big drop-off in sales around that March-April period when we had the first, part of the Iran-US-Israel war, surging petrol prices before the fuel excise cuts really kicked in, after we'd just been hit with a couple of Reserve Bank interest rate hikes. And then there was a bit of a bounce in sales in May. Even though the Reserve Bank hit people again, there was a feeling that maybe things were calming down and we'd passed the worst. And Myer's sales reflected that. But then the past 2 months, we've seen a 5.5% drop-off followed by a 4% drop-off month on month in Myer's sales. Those are pretty big numbers. And to even maintain those levels of sales, Myer's executive chairperson, Olivia Wirth, has said that the company has had to engage in some pretty serious discounting to try and get customers to part with their money. So it's a subdued customer, weak discretionary spending. I mean, it's the one thing you'd have to say as a silver lining generally about this is if Myer's experience reflects other retailers, if you're a Michelle Bullock and you're sitting there looking at this trading update, you're going, well, you know what? I think our interest rate rises are working.
Normally before the end of financial year, lots of sales to drive those numbers up. As you say, that hasn't worked. They've seen revenue and turnover go down. I guess for the RBA, it looks like this is working. The signals have been there, please spend less money. And the international factors have played into that, where people are spending vastly more at the Bowser, very concerned about that volatility, about that uncertainty, and not spending as much on discretionary items they don't actually need to get through the week.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what the Reserve Bank wants to see. They want to see sales. Price cuts in certain areas because certain, certain essentials prices are rising. We have earlier seen the big rise in fuel prices. If the excise does come off, then we're baking in a big rise in fuel prices probably for August in that lot of inflation figures. Despite talk of electricity price cuts, that hasn't been reflected in everyone's bills, and we did a good story on that a while ago, how some people are still seeing their electricity bills go up even though the default offer is coming down. So we're seeing a lot of price pressures, new housing construction, things like that. So if in discretionary areas like department stores, like hospitality, people going out, you start seeing some price cuts, that could be really positive and show that in the areas where the Reserve Bank can make a difference because they've cut the amount people can spend, it is having an effect and it is making consumers cautious and look for discounts before they spend money.
We'll get more information on this on Wednesday when inflation data comes out. This is the Consumer Price Index or CPI, and we get a really broad look across the economy of where people are and are not spending money. What should we be looking for?
Yeah, so we've seen some forecasts on that inflation data that's out on Wednesday, a couple of key ones from the Commonwealth Bank and Westpac's economics teams. Both of them have similar expectations and they're broadly in line with the market. They expect headline inflation to remain around 4% in June. That's expected to be up by just 0.2% month on month, which is pretty modest. The biggest factor in keeping in headline inflation low is the big fall in fuel prices over the month of June. As we had the ceasefire, the conflict died down for a while. Markets cut the crude oil price. It fell back towards $70 a barrel. Everything looked like it was okay for a little while. We saw that is expected to have about a 9% reduction in the fuel prices that are part of those inflation figures under the transport sector.
Now, we talk about inflation being the speed of price rises. The RBA wants prices to rise between about 2 and 3% a year. We're well beyond that, well outside of that. Despite that fall in fuel prices, the economists are tipping that the trimmed mean, which is the RBA's preferred measure, it's the one that gets rid of or deals with really volatile items, massive swings in particular sectors. So even this trimmed mean is expected to be higher, even though we've had that fall in fuel prices.
Yeah, that's right. So even in the headline figures, there are things offsetting that fall in fuel prices, some of which will themselves be cut out of that less volatile trimmed mean. So one of them is holiday prices. So I'm pretty sure we all know someone who's jetted off to Europe for a holiday. I don't know where the usual host of this podcast is, but certainly, like, when I've been ringing people to try and line up interviews, there's been an awful lot of people unavailable or only available on Zoom because they're currently in Europe or perhaps North America. We just had the World Cup as well. So there has expected to be a big increase in prices, particularly for travel and including overseas travel. That could be up by 7% or more and offset some of the fall in motoring fuel costs. Also, new housing constructions become a lot more expensive again over the past year, and that's expected to weigh, to add to the inflationary pressure. And also rents just refuse to slow down and remain relatively elevated because we just don't have enough rental properties for the number of people who are looking for them. So despite the discounting in department stores and certain items, despite the cheaper fuel, there are all these other things offsetting that. We are expected to see trimmed mean inflation hit about 3.7%. That would be a 0.9% quarterly increase. That quarterly increase has been pretty consistent for a while now, and it is well above the level the Reserve Bank needs to see, which is about 0.6 or 0.7% per quarter to hit its 2 to 3% annual inflation target. And that's why some economists think there will be pressure on the Reserve Bank to consider further rate hikes.
Well, on that, plenty of central banks meeting around the world this week. What can we expect from this wave of monetary policy announcements? We've got the US Fed on Wednesday, the UK on Thursday, Japan on Friday. Where are they heading?
Yeah, so we've got the US Fed. We'll find out about that early Thursday morning, our time. Pretty much all of them are the same picture. It's interesting how globalized inflation is. Perhaps not surprising in a still very globalized economy. US Fed not expected to raise rates. Maybe a 30-odd percent chance, according to markets, that they'll put in a surprise rate hike, but probably not. Similarly for the UK, not expected to shift rates this month. Japan also not expected to shift rates this month. And in those two, the market has an even smaller expectation of a rate rise. The thing that they all have in common, though, is while they might not pull the trigger this month, markets are pricing in rate hikes this year. So in the case of the Fed, we've got basically one rate hike fully priced in for later this year and two priced in by early next year. For the Bank of England, where borrowing costs are currently around 3.75%, markets are pricing in two rate hikes by the end of this year. So one for the Fed this year, maybe another one early next year, two for the Bank of England priced in for this year, Japan, one rate hike priced in later this year, basically as a certainty by the end of the year. So, you know, the interesting thing with Japan, though, is that it'll take the cash rate from 1% to 1.25%.
Your regular reminder that things are different in Japan, and if there's any way of getting some money there and putting it in the suitcase, bring it back. If that's legal, you should think about doing that.
Well, that's precisely what Japanese investors have been doing for years in the carry trade. Borrow money cheaply in Japan, send it over to the US or Australia or somewhere else with higher interest rates and bring the earnings back, which worked a treat for a long time. But even their interest rate at 1% has made that carry trade less profitable than it used to be and is basically starting to kill it.
Of course, we're really focused on our RBA meeting, which is August 10 and 11. Does it matter that these international decisions are coming down the line, or do they just focus on the Australian conditions, obviously inflation, jobs, to try and deal with the two problems they have, being trying to keep us at full employment and trying to deal with what is persistently high inflation?
Well, I think, Dan, we've seen evidence this year that the Reserve Bank is primarily focused on Australia, because while other central banks were sitting still, the Reserve Bank raised interest rates three times. So that was about inflationary pressures that they saw in the Australian economy that had them deeply concerned about the local situation. And if they feel that the domestic economy is still too strong, I mean, we saw jobs numbers out last week showing 76,000 people employed, extra people employed last month, and the unemployment rate still at 4.4%, despite a lot more people joining the labour force looking for work or in work, and we've got employment to population ratio still near record highs. There's a lot of evidence there for the Reserve Bank that the domestic economy actually looks a lot stronger than people are giving it credit for. And, you know, that adds to the prospect of getting an interest rate hike. But currently the market's just pricing it at a 27% chance for that August meeting. Again, the market sees a near certainty of one more rate hike either late this year or early next, but they're just not convinced that it's going to happen in August. They think the RBA might want to wait longer and see what's happening before it pulls the trigger again.
Well, she's very cautious in her public statements, but we'll get some insight from RBA Governor Michelle Bullock. She's speaking tomorrow to the Australian Business Economists Group. It will be on our blog and then on The Business that night.
Yes, well, indeed, I will be going down there to hopefully get a question in to the Reserve Bank Governor, and so will Kirsten Aiken, the presenter of The Business. So we'll be having a chat on location after that lunch to basically share our thoughts on what we take from Michelle Bullock's speech. And it is the last real major public appearance before that next RBA board meeting. So if she wants to send a signal about the likely direction of interest rates, tomorrow is going to be when she'll send it.
Well, that's for tomorrow. For today, that is it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another pod tomorrow. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send in a question, email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. That's abcbusinessdaily, all one word, at abc.net.au. Mike, lovely to chat. Catch you later.
Catch you soon, Dan.